Good news from Britain, we can now go back to eating runny eggs.
This is London Calling.
Hi, I'm Graham Mack, and yes, it's true. For 30 years, we've been told not to eat raw, soft-boiled, or runny eggs. But now the Food Standards Agency says that almost all of eggs produced in the UK are virtually free of salmonella. Here's Mark Williams, the chief executive of the British Egg Industry Council.
We are absolutely delighted that the Food Standards Agency say that pregnant women, mums with young babies and the elderly can now eat runny eggs again. It's a testament to the amount of work that's been done by our egg producers in this country in improving egg safety.
This all started in 1988 when the then junior health minister, the Conservative MP Edwina Curry, warned the British public that most of the egg production in the UK was affected by salmonella. The ramifications were colossal, causing egg sales to plummet. But now we can rejoice. Eggs are safe. Great news, eh, Daphne?
I know. They said that you won't get salmonella and what have you.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that did get sick from eating a runny egg. I've been eating runny eggs the whole time. So it was all nonsense anyway.
That's that curry woman for you.
Yeah, Edwina Curry, old Eggwina.
That is the same one.
Yeah. I've met her. Strange.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. I met her at a radio conference once. She was doing something.
You're not conservative, are you?
I am apolitical. I think that all politicians are power-hungry megalomaniacs and they need to be stopped.
You're dead right there.
They're all as bad as each other, and they all try to say that if you give them what they crave, which is power, that they will wave a magic wand and everything will be all right. And people are believing it. Right now, we have a Conservative government and people believe that if you vote for Jeremy Corbyn, everything will be right in the world. Well, they also believed that they'd vote for Brexit, that everything would be right in the world. And that's just complicated things.
Yeah.
Politicians are dirty dogs, and that's how they work. And it isn't that. To make things work, you need a blend. Like you need capitalism, because that's what makes the world go around. You know, that's the supply and demand. But you also need regulation on business or the banks go silly. You also need to care for the most vulnerable in society. But you don't need to be paying people for sitting on their asses and give them no motivation. It's a blend of different philosophies. It's not one or the other, for goodness sake. So I am apolitical, and I think we should do something about these damn politicians.
Well, we'll vote you in, Graham.
Yeah, what that? No. Billy Connolly said, if anybody wants to be a politician, then that is enough reason for them not to be one or not to be allowed to be one. So no chance. Thanks, Daphne.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. In Britain, we're still shocked over what happened in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago.
Call the police. Someone's firing a gun up here. Someone's firing a rifle on the 32nd floor down the hallway.
America's two biggest problems, God and guns. Too many people believe in God, too many people believe in the right to carry firearms. First of all, the God thing. When are you people going to realize there is no God? People are asking for God to bring us together and please God and everything now. God, 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 God. If there is a God, where was he when all those innocent people were being shot? Where was your God? And if you believe in that God, you believe in a God that stands by and lets evil happen. What kind of God is that to believe in? Now let's get on to guns. A bloke who I've spoken to a couple of times is an adventurer called Graham Hughes. He holds the world record for visiting the most countries in the world in the shortest time. He's literally a man of the world. He's been in all kinds of cultures. He's met all kinds of people. He tweeted this great tweet yesterday. The Vegas shooter killed more people in 15 minutes than were killed by guns in total in the UK in the last 2 years. And it's because we've got stronger gun control laws. In Australia, when I was there, in 1996, there was a massacre in Tasmania. And I think it was 35 people were killed at a cafe called the Broad Arrow Cafe in Tasmania. So they brought in pretty strict gun control laws in Australia. Now, Australia, a country more like the USA than Britain, It's a similar size to the USA. It's some of it is still a kind of a frontier mentality. And in parts of Australia, there are dangerous things that will kill you if you don't have a rifle with you. People need guns, and all of the cops are armed as well. They brought in this gun reform without that much opposition. And since 1996, there has not been another gun massacre. Not one. Not ever. It hasn't happened. When is the United States going to sort out its gun control laws? The scale of this tragedy, this latest one, it's beyond shocking. The pain of the families and the members of the community, it's unimaginable. This Stephen Paddock, he opened fire from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel towards an open-air music festival. Now, we all know that America needs better gun control laws, but there's still a lot of people that see gun control as an attack on their freedom. And they'll talk about the Second Amendment. Like, you can't take our guns off us because of the Second Amendment to the Constitution, and you can't change the Constitution. Well, yes, you can. The fact that the Second Amendment is an amendment. Now, it's this phrase. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, on the face of it, that looks like all American citizens have the right to carry a gun for personal protection, doesn't it? But they only ever quote that bit, the second, that's the second half of a sentence. So they quote this bit, the right of the American people to bear arms shall not be infringed. The full sentence is, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So you've got to look at that first bit, a well-regulated militia. What's that all about? Well, the Second Amendment was adopted on December the 15th, 1791. It was a different time, under different circumstances, with very different weapons. Success in the Revolutionary War had helped America's founding fathers understand the need for firearms. A faraway government, Britain, had imposed taxes without representation. Armed citizens had fought for the right to form their own government. It's more than likely that the founding fathers wanted guns to be available in case they needed to do that again. And as well as that, America was still expanding in the 1700s. There were territorial disputes with the native people, so they needed guns. And the most high-tech weapon of the day was the musket. Someone who knew what he was doing could take a single, wildly inaccurate shot, then rummage around with a ramrod and a powder bag for over a minute before being able to shoot again. The only way multiple shots could be fired with muskets was with multiple muskets and a well-disciplined group of shooters. In other words, a well-regulated militia. Now, muskets were used for personal protection, but when people did die from musket wounds, it was often because of lead poisoning or infection. So this Second Amendment that they go on about is way out of date. There's no way the American founding fathers could have imagined the weapons technology of today. The arms referred to in that Second Amendment are Revolutionary War era muskets. Now, they have tried to bring things up to date. In 1994, a law banning assault weapons came in, and but the law was only for 10 years. It was a ban for 10 years instead of a ban forever. So it expired in 2004 at the end of the George W. Bush administration. So it doesn't exist. But they did have it for 10 years, a ban on assault weapons. So I don't know if tougher gun laws would have stopped this Stephen Paddock from killing at least 59 people and injuring another 527. At this Las Vegas concert, and we'll never know that. But what we do know is that the weapons he used were military-style automatic rifles. I mean, would he have been allowed to own those guns if that 1994 law had not been allowed to expire? Machine guns are legal in Nevada. You are allowed to carry weapons and don't have to register as a gun owner. They do have background checks when you buy a gun, but then you're allowed to sell them privately. And then you get Donald Trump in the speech afterwards. Not a word about gun control. It's the worst massacre in US history. Not a word. He's talking about condolence and spiritual guidance. Yeah, condolence, yeah. Spiritual guidance? We're back to God again. It's called for national unity. Well, thoughts and prayers and calls for national unity won't stop this happening again. Gun control might. John the bus driver's on the phone. What's on your mind, John?
Why does everyone have road rage?
I don't know. I don't know why people get so upset. What's the big deal? You're sitting there in the comfort of your own vehicle. You've got your favourite radio station on. You've got the temperature exactly how you want it. Why are they getting so upset?
I had a guy yesterday who was quite funny. I pulled out a bus stop and he took me over, gave me a very nice hand gesture. So I got next to him, I blew him a kiss. make things a bit better, you know, and he got even more angry. So I started smiling at him, waving, then I blew him another kiss to try and he just kept getting angry and angry. I didn't know why. I was just doing my job.
Now, did he think you'd
do it all the time? I get so many people bibbing at me, it's unreal.
Did he think you'd pulled out on him?
Maybe.
Because people don't realise that buses have the right of way. You're supposed to, if they're coming out of a bus stop, they've got the indicator on, you're supposed to let them out. You're not supposed...
Yeah.
In fact, really, if someone has got their indicator on anyway, and they're going to... Why would you try and overtake them, you crazy idiot? They might crash into you. But buses,
yeah, exactly.
Especially, if someone's got their indicator on, let them out. But buses, you have to, by law, let them out.
You never know. Your nan could be on the bus.
There you
or
go.
Or family relative.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
I just found it so funny that I kept blowing him a kiss, you know, trying to just get angry and angrier. It was quite hilarious. All my pastures were laughing as well, because they were seeing what I was doing.
Brilliant.
They said, good on you. I was like, thank you.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing, John.
That's all right, man. Have a good day.
Britain is in trouble. Monarch Airlines has gone bust. Around 110,000 customers were stranded overseas last week. Monarch is the UK's fifth biggest airline and the country's biggest to ever go into administration. Meanwhile, there was chaos in London because London Underground train drivers went on strike and train drivers all over the country were already on strike. Let's look at how bad things are in the UK right now. We've got strikes. A major airline has gone bust. And there's the constant threat of terror attacks after what happened in Manchester and London. All of this is going to affect the number of tourists that come here. Maybe we need a rebrand. Maybe we could sell Britain as a themed country. And the theme is the 1970s. Monarch has gone bust. There's over 110,000 people right now stranded overseas. It's all a bit of a mess. When have you been stranded, Bob?
Oh, I've been stranded at Calais Port.
What happened there?
The French were on strike.
Oh, they blockaded the port.
Yeah, yeah.
And what were you coming back with?
The old booze cruise.
Oh, you went on the booze cruise?
Yeah.
So you go down to the Froggy supermarket, you fill up on all kinds of plonk, you've got tons of it, it's all in the car, can't get back.
Yeah. Can't get back.
What'd you do?
Sat there for a couple of hours and started tooting the horn, and everyone started tooting their horns, and then they let us on the boat.
And then they let you on the boat?
Yeah.
So that's the language. That's the language of the protester. That's what you were speaking their language. That's exactly what they would do. Is toot horns as a protest. So you protested back, and it worked. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Bob, thank you so much.
All right. Okay.
Cheers. Is working in an office real work? I had this thought while I was watching the latest season of Better Call Saul. Bob Odenkirk's character Jimmy is ordered to do community service, and the work he's given is to pick up litter under a highway overpass. I realised that for some people, that kind of work isn't punishment. It's their job, and they're glad to have it. When you think about it, what people who are given community service are forced to do is always physical labour, like litter picking, cleaning off graffiti or gardening. No one's ever forced to do office work. When I was an air conditioning engineer in Australia, I remember getting an apprentice to clean out a cooling tower. It was horrible work. But it was the day after that he was grumpy about it. I asked him why, and he said after a day stuck inside a cooling tower with a wire brush, he got home to his girlfriend and she was complaining about what a terrible day she'd had at work because she'd been forced to spend the afternoon photocopying. They ended up getting into a row about who works the hardest. He had a point. No one's ever forced to do photocopying as part of their community service. And the same goes for filing or answering the phone, data entry or sitting in a meeting drinking tea and eating biscuits. So, unless what you do for a living is given to people as a punishment, is it real work? When have you been stranded? Danielle?
I had a bit of an unfortunate incident once when my dad forgot to do the car insurance properly.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the car seized off us at Warrington Lim on the way back from collecting a puppy.
Wait. So you drive from, where do you live?
Live in Stevenage.
So you drive from Stevenage to Lim, which is near Warrington.
No. We drive from Stevenage to Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
To collect a puppy.
Okay. So you
and
went
on
over
the way
on.
Back,
so I went on the ferry from Liverpool.
We went up to Scotland, Stranraer.
Okay, you went across that way, and on the way, wow, that's a hell of a trip. And then on the way back, you're on the M6 at Lim.
And we stopped at the services.
Yeah.
And on the way back, on the way out of the services, the motorway policeman pulls us over and says, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And then some short minutes later, he says, I'm sorry, but I'm taking that car off of you. And I'm stood in the car park with a puppy quite a long way from home.
And the car was confiscated because you didn't have insurance?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't have insurance?
Something had gone wrong with his insurance or whatever.
Jeez.
So we were stuck in Warrington Lim. So I had to put in a call to a very nice friend and ask him to drive up and collect us.
See, it would have taken him like 4 hours to drive up.
Yeah.
That's a long way.
Yeah.
Oh, Brexit is a mess. In a speech in Florence, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, said she wants to delay a full Brexit until 2021. She's asking EU countries to agree to a 2-year transition period where the UK would carry on getting unfettered access to the single market. Wait a minute. By saying that, she's admitting that Brexit is a bad idea. She's saying that we want to carry on getting the benefits of membership after we're out for as long as possible, and wants to delay an actual Brexit as long as she can. If Brexit was a good thing for Britain, wouldn't she want to get us out as soon as she can? The negotiations over Brexit are continuing, and in any negotiation, the two things you need to get a great deal are the ability to walk away and a position of strength. Well, now she's admitted that we'd be better off in the EU than out. She's weakened our negotiating position. And as for the ability to walk away with no deal, well, we had a referendum. The people have spoken. We can't walk away. We have to get out at any cost. In other words, whatever price the EU says we have to pay. There's a lot of uncertainty about Brexit. But what we can be sure of is that in the long term, it's going to be bad for Britain. And in the short term, we're going to get a crappy deal. Let's cross now live to North Yorkshire. What's your stranded story, Jane?
I can remember being stranded in Leeds.
What happened? Oh, that's a horrible thing to happen to anyone.
I lost my train ticket home.
How old were you?
About 10. No, a bit older than that. I wouldn't have been in Leeds. But a girl, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to ring my mum.
Yeah.
And my mum came in the car to pick me up, which is a bit lame. Well, it's incredibly lame because these people are stranded in Europe. They're not...
Well, yeah, interesting that... I keep hearing these stories. You know, my childhood was not idyllic.
Yeah,
and
I've learned this.
Yeah, and that, you know, it's like this show, not so much a program, more a cry for help. What happened? I can remember, the one I remember was my mate and me, my mate Paul Dobson, he came around to my house like kind of late on. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something in the school holidays. And he said, do you want to go on a bike ride? And I said, yeah. I said, I've always wondered, because we lived in Warrington, well, at Great Sankey, between kind of on the Liverpool side of Warrington.
Yeah, yeah.
And we decided it would be interesting to go over the Mersey, over the Runcorn Bridge, and then come back through the centre of Warrington, because there's a bridge in Warrington, you can come over there. So we didn't have a map or anything, but we thought we'd figure it out along the way, and this is about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So we ride our bikes to Widnes, and then we go over the Runcorn Bridge, which I don't know if you've ever been over it, but it's a very, very busy... I mean, there are, like, articulated lorries and everything
going.
No, I've
been under it.
Are you right? Okay, yeah. Well, this is, it's a busy thing. So we ride our push bikes over that. We get over to the Runcorn side, and we can't work out how to get to Warrington without going back over the Runcorn Bridge. So we wait and we wait and we wait, and it's starting to get dusk now. We find a phone box, and I ring my dad, who's just got home from work at this stage, because it's like 6 o'clock in the evening or whatever. And he says, what do you mean you don't know the way to go back? I said, well, we can't work it out. He said, well, go back the way you came. I said, well, it's kind of getting dark now, and Dobbo's got no lights on his bike. He's like, well, I can't tell you. Your bikes will never fit in the boot of the Cortina. I'm like, oh, all right. So we had to come back over the blinking Runcorn Bridge in the dark with Dobbo with no lights on his bike.
he'd probably be taken to one side by a burly policeman these days and reported for child abuse.
Who, my father?
Yeah.
Do you think? So basically, I didn't...
You'd have probably been taken into care nowadays.
I don't know, but I'm thinking, like, he just left. We had to find our own way home. I mean...
Oh, my mum was great. She was really used to the phone calls from goodness knows where. Mum, I've got on the wrong bus, or I've lost my money, or I've spent my money. Which was usually what it was, really.
Yeah.
She was like, yeah, okay. And she would turn up eventually, but it could be several hours later.
Right, okay. Yeah, but at least she turned up.
Oh, yeah, she was really, really good. No, I don't think I've been ever stranded abroad. I've managed to not be able to get abroad because having got to the ferry with two small children and husband and car packed to the gunwales for camping in Spain, husband turned and said, where did you put the passport?
No!
This is actually at the ferry in Dover. And I said, no, you put the passport.
Oh,
he said, no, I didn't.
Oh,
that
dear.
One was awkward, but the tension was in the air for a little while. They actually had a lot of smooth talking, let us out of the country without them.
Oh, did they in the end?
Yeah,
wow.
And just said we might have a trouble getting back in.
Did you?
No. They took one look at us, the car, the kids. Yeah, please go.
Joe.
I was stranded in the dense fog on Wimbledon Common. Now, it sounds as
you know, doesn't sound very serious, but it's much...
Well, hang on, it sounds a bit ominous. What were you doing walking on Wimbledon Common in dense fog?
Well, it was a perfectly nice day, perfectly nice. It really was. I was walking, I was going for a walk on Wimbledon Common.
Uh-huh.
Quite natural, like people do.
Yeah.
And suddenly this fog descended and it was really dense. I'm not exaggerating. You couldn't see until someone came very close to you. You couldn't actually see them. So, but I thought, I'll be all right. Yeah, I was embarrassed. I met one family, I think that's where they were, and I could have asked them, but I was embarrassed. I didn't want to admit that I felt lost. You know, so
you're completely disorientated. You had no landmarks or anything to guide you.
No, and it's much bigger than people think. And so I thought, I'll keep going, I'll retrace my steps and I'll find my way back to where I came in.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept going and kept going, and it became really terrifying. And when the fog finally did actually find my way to the edge of the common, it was a different area from where I came in that I didn't know. I didn't know that particular area. So I had to go and knock at the door of the nearest house to ask them to direct me the way to walk back to town. And
goodness,
it was just
mate.
The whole thing was really embarrassing.
I bet it was. Thanks for sharing, Jo.
Thank you.
Let me steal a bit from Adam Carolla's excellent podcast. He does a regular feature about people who don't like to spend money. Tales from the Cheap. Inspired by this bloke in China who was too cheap to pay his hotel bill, 19 floors up, he climbs out the window and attempts to get away by climbing across the telephone wire to the building next door. Linda, what's your tale from the Cheap?
I have a mate who's got shed loads of money. It's unreal. And he's the most tightest person that ever walked the earth.
Is he really? Well, Julie worked for a bloke in Sydney, Australia. Julie used to work in one of those places that developed films. And the bloke who ran it was a millionaire, but he never bought anything new. Everything was secondhand. He'd go to auctions and everything. Nothing in his house. He never bought anything brand new.
Right. With my mate, it's a tendency of, one instance is that I go and help him do gardening for him and all that, you know, and I mean, he won't pay out money for any black dustbin liners or anything.
Right.
And, you know, he's got, like, a full bin full, which is not a large wheelie bin full, which should be because of the size of his garden. He's got a tiny one.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's full up, he says, oh, I've got the garden done, but no, I really can't afford the bag, so no, maybe we'll leave it till next week.
Really?
And
he's loaded. And he's loaded.
And he's another like,
and how much is a bin bag? I mean, they're like pence for a whole roll of them.
Oh, yeah, and if you get them in pound, then I'm sure it wouldn't matter to me, you know, but it's unreal.
Oh.
And, you know, I said to him, you're so tight, I said, you know, and quite the funny story about it wasn't him, was he had this carpet and he kept getting moths in the carpet.
Yeah.
And he didn't know how to get rid of them. He's putting all these potions down and everything else. And I said, do you know what it is? He goes, what's that? I said, you're opening your wallet too much.
Piper.
My mother-in-law, bless her, she's quite skint. One of the things that she does is she doesn't flush the toilet.
Why doesn't she flush the toilet? To save water.
To save money on water.
Ah, what? Oh, no.
She lives on her own.
There's no excuse. No. Terrible. Piper, thank you very much.
Okay.
There is a new fashion trend for nasal hair extensions. Hooly dooly, that is wrong on so many levels. Pete's on the phone.
It's ridiculous. What a passion killer, Graham.
Yes!
What a passion killer. You know, I mean, the only thing that comes to my mind is what's next? It's going to be pubic hair extensions with hairs hanging out the bottom of your trousers. You look like Chewbacca.
Pete, get off. Tell her.
Have a good day, Graham.
Hair extensions for nose hair. Women are getting these. I think they'll regret them. I think it's just a fad rather than a trend. What's your crime of fashion that you're willing to confess? Kev?
Sadly, it's not for me. It's one of my closest mates from school. As he developed, as a young man, he developed an uncanny resemblance to Vernon Kay.
To who?
Vernon Kay.
Vernon Kay, the failed broadcaster.
Indeed.
Yes.
And at the time, he was obviously a reasonably cool guy, so he modelled his appearance more and more on him as everyone started to call him it quite often.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, Vernon decided it would be a good idea to start straightening his hair.
Straightening his hair, yes. Yeah.
So we'd gone away for a bit of a guy's weekend, and while everyone was unpacking, my friend removed a pair of straighteners from his bag.
And this was a lad's weekend?
This was a lad's weekend away, and one of the boys had a pair of straighteners in their bag.
A bloke took some hair straighteners on a boy's weekend.
That was more than enough to give us plenty of banter for a few years.
Absolutely. How did he think he was going to get away with this?
Well, he obviously thought it was too cool to escape any more banter and throwback.
Kev, thank you very much. What was this fella's name?
It was Simon.
Simon! Hair straighteners on a lad's weekend? What were you thinking? Thanks, Kev. I'm Graham Mack. We've been talking about misconceptions. Rhonda.
A friend of my ex-husband.
Yeah.
He has two friends, and they were farmers, and they're in the field, ploughing this field. And the son, he's got his Wellington boots full of mud, so he walks over to a pylon, hangs on, got his legs in the air, shaking it, trying to get his welly off.
Yeah.
His father thinks he's being electrocuted by the pylon, so he runs over with his shovel, knocks him off, breaks his arm.
And breaks his arm?
He breaks his arm.
Oh,
he was dying.
Easy mistake to make, though.
If you're hanging on to a pylon and shaking your head, well,
yeah. Oh, okay. Dear. Oh, brilliant. Rhonda, thank you so much.
All right, then.
What crime of fashion are you willing to confess to? Gary.
In the 80s, my very best friend, Jason Kirby, who is no longer alive, rest his soul. What a lovely guy he really was. We were both mods in the 80s.
Oh, phase two mods,
And we used to go to Simon's Green Youth Club, and we used to wear eyeliner to make our eyes stand out. And we used to wear jam shoes, red, white and blue jam shoes, or black and white jam shoes. We thought we were the business.
Yeah, I bet. And yeah, did you have the fishtail parka and the scooter?
Still got it, Graham. Still got the scooters as well.
Have you really? You still got the whole kit and caboodle?
Yeah, I have indeed. Once a model, with a mod.
What do you got, the Vespa or the Lambretta?
Both.
You got both? Wow. Wow. You really are a proper top mod.
Yeah.
So you got the Fred Perry t-shirt, you got the two-tone trousers were a big deal as well for a little while.
I've got a two-tone suit.
Yeah.
But I haven't got two-tone trousers anymore. I'm a little bit old for that. And I've got no hair now, Graham, so I'm the baldest mod in Stevenage, really. But there we go.
Well, the pork pie hat, you could carry that off. You need to get that. Thank you very much, Gary.
All right, bye-bye.
Cheers,
bye.
Mate. What do you look back on as a crime of fashion? Mick.
I was a punk for a day.
You were a punk for a day? Right.
Yeah, all my mates, they all had Mohicans and colored hair and things.
Yeah.
I asked them how they did it. They said, oh, lots of egg whites. So I put about 6 egg whites in my hair, trying to spice it up.
Yeah.
About 3 cans of hairspray. It was horrible. Absolutely horrible. I hated it.
So what about your outfit? What was your outfit like? It was just your hair, but what were you wearing?
I was the old proper leather jacket, you know, the...
A lot of zips.
And the jeans, with the turn-ups on the jeans, and the, was it 12-hole Dr. Martin boots with yellow laces.
Right. And after a day, you decided this is not for me.
I didn't like the hair, it was too much. I ended up cutting it all off and ended up with a skinhead.
Mick, thanks very much for confessing.
Thanks, Graham.
Cheers. What would you like to confess, Simon?
Unfortunately for my wife,
yes.
I actually have no sense of shame
right.
when it comes to abominable fashion.
Okay.
So I have some of the finest, hideous Hawaiian shirts that TK Maxx could offer in the late 90s.
Right.
Well, yeah, Hawaiian-style short sleeve shirts, but with, like, dragon patterns. You remember the late 90s? It was dragons bloody everywhere. They were just, like, dragons left, right, and centre. And one of my favourite ones that I still have, it was like a satin effect. It's obviously polyester because it's cheap.
Yeah.
But it's like a black shimmery satin. And it had two massive, and I'm talking like 7-8 inch high, gothic crosses.
Yeah.
Embroidered in red stitch. And these things are like nearly an inch wide.
Yeah.
7-8 inches high. Embroidered on the left and right of the chest, one either side of the button line. And inlaid in that cross design was a red crocodile skin pattern pleather. I still own that shirt.
And that was in a Hawaiian style?
As in short sleeve.
Yes.
Cotton up. And look, my wife just refuses to go anywhere when I wear it. So
There are still occasions when you think about wearing it, Simon, really?
I still wore it a couple of months ago.
All right, this is a continuing crime of fashion. Thanks for confessing.
Oh, yes.
Let's check in with Jim McCabe, who's on Skype from Philadelphia. Oh, I'm going to yawn. Oh, sorry about that, Jim. I'm knackered.
Sounds like you need a cup of tea.
I need something. Yesterday, Julie, last week, I said, look, I'm taking the car for a service next week. Give me your key, because my key has my USB stick on it, and I keep stuff on there, and I put it on my car key so I can never leave it anywhere. You know, I can't drive away without it. I can't leave it in Liverpool or at Bob. It's on my USB stick with all my little bits and pieces on. It's on my car key, which I think is a great system until your car needs a service. And I said, I don't want to give them my key. Give me your key and I'll give them that at the service. So she hunts high and low. She can't find it. So then she comes up with the theory that she dropped her bag on a train a couple of weeks ago. She went to a restaurant with a friend of hers, and they were both vegetarian, so they went to a vegan restaurant. Anyway, she dropped her bag and stuff fell out, and she thought she'd put everything. She says maybe the key was one of the things that didn't make it back in the bag. I'm like, okay. I said, well, you better ring Lexus and sort out getting another one. I said, and also get onto the lost property with the railway and see if they'll. So she got onto that lost property, still no answer. So she texted me yesterday. She said, I called Lexus and they quoted me a price to replace the key. £360.
That's
outrageous, isn't it? So I thought, well, I thought yesterday I'm going to be, when I get home, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to spend the day on the internet on YouTube finding a way around this. You must be able to buy a non-genuine Lexus key somewhere, somehow, and then take it to Lexus and have them program it for about £20 or something. There must be a way around it. So I got home and I said, wow, they're charged like wounded bulls for those keys, aren't they? You won't be losing that one. She says, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, well, I'm going to have a look on the internet, see if I can work a way around it. Oh, no, I've ordered it. I said, oh, well, if I find a way around it, you can cancel it. Oh, no, they took the payment as well.
Oh. Of course they did. Of course.
Off the credit card, yeah. And thinking, you can imagine him going, hey, Frank, I got a lady on here, lost a car key. How much are they? Oh, tell her 360.
Hurry
up. Yeah, and get the money off her now before she talks to her husband. Tell her to pay up now, or we can't do it unless she pays. And that is actually what they told her. We can't order it unless you pay. Oh, wow. So that's that gone. Jeez. So,
wow.
But meanwhile, the car's in for a service today, so I'm dropping it off today, picking it up tomorrow, and she's driving down there on Friday to get her brand new key. Jeez, bloody cars. You know, the service is going to cost me about the same as the bloody key. I'm going to be out for over £700 for nothing. There's nothing wrong with the car. She lost the key and the service is just due. I mean, nothing wrong with it. Jeez. Bloody thing.
Yeah, it's, what is it? It's a year old, less than that, isn't it?
It was a year old in May. So, but the thing is, it had 3,000 miles on it when I got it. It was less than a year old when I got it. I got it in April, and in May it turned a year old. It had less than 3,000 miles on it when I got it. It's now got 17,500, because I go up to Liverpool and back every weekend. So I checked the book, and, you know, you're supposed to get it serviced every 10,000 miles or every year, whichever comes first. But it does say in there, if you if it's motorway miles, if it's easy miles, you can wait a bit longer, so it's due.
So it'll be oil, it'll be some random thing, it'll be, oh, this is about to go, so just to be on the safe side, we'll change that as well.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. In fact, first day we had it, Julie curbed one of the wheels, the front wheel. No, the back wheel, back left-hand side wheel, she curbed it. And I've got to admit, I curbed one of the front wheels even worse coming out of a car park in Liverpool. And I have said to them, when it's in for the service, give me a price on having those two wheels fixed up. So, because, you know, I won't go to a Lexus dealer and get the wheels fixed up, but at least I'll have the price of what Lexus charge. So I know when I go somewhere else and say, look, what is it? But I bet they quote me a price of like 200 quid a wheel. I bet. I bet I'm going to pay at least 100 a wheel when I eventually do get it done. But,
is it just cosmetic, or are they out of round or anything?
No, it's just cosmetic. It's just the wheels are black. And, when you scuff them on a curb, it shows up, you know, the silvery white color underneath.
That's all.
It is, you know. It's just, you can get, it's easy to get. They just dress them. I don't know what they do, but I had it on the Mazda MX-5. I had the wheels were, I mean, I had that car for over 10 years, and at about year 8, it was in for something else. The body, it was in for getting the sills replaced because they'd rusted. And the guy said to me, there, we can fix up all four wheels for, and he gave me a price to fix up all four wheels. And I said, yeah, go ahead and do it. It was a great deal. And I don't mind that when they're opportunists like that, as long as they're not being silly. And so I know they can be fixed up. And they actually managed to paint them exactly the same color as the car on the MX-5, because they were previously like a gold color, and they looked great when it was done, all four wheels. And they had them the same paintwork as the car, because they had the paint
so,
to do the other
job. You know it could be done. Yeah. And you know it's not as expensive as what they're going to say.
I know it's not. Yeah. It will be at the Lexus dealership. Will just, you know, they may even say, oh, you need new wheels. You know, who knows? You know, that's how they work. But geez, 360 quid for a key. Holy crap. That is just a ripoff. 360. She'd already paid it. She didn't tell me that in the text. She'd already paid it.
Yeah, usually they don't charge you until you actually get it.
Yeah. But they gave us some bull about, oh, we can't order it. It's got to come from Germany, and we can't order it unless you pay for it. Oh, yeah, all right. They know. Who's calling
the... sounds like some... That's a line.
That's a line they give to the wife before the husband gets home and finds out. That's what they do.
Yeah.
There's no... If I'd called, if they'd have said, yeah, we want the money up front, I would have said, no, let me get back to you, because I would have been on the net. Because I managed with the first Porsche we had, the Cayman, I wanted a new key, because the previous key, when you put it in your pocket, the button would often pop the boot open. And I Googled it. Yeah, and they Googled it, and they said, well, yeah, you want a different type of key fob, because they updated them. That's from the Generation 1 key fob. They updated them. And I went online, and for about, I think it was £6, I bought a blank fob with Porsche written on it, but it was fake. So I ordered that, and they put it in the post. It came from Wales. And then all you do is you take the actual blade, because the Porsche key has an actual key blade. You take the blade off and transplant it onto the knockoff version.
Right.
And then the hard part was getting out. There's a little chip in there that you had to dig out, and you actually destroy the original Porsche fob getting it out. You break the plastic and everything to get the fob out. You transplant this little chip, which has got all the coded information on, and you glue it in inside. And all the guts, you know, the electronics and the battery and the little circuitry in there. You transplant all the guts into this blank skeleton fob, and bingo, you've got a brand new key for literally £7, which Porsche would charge you over 200 for a new one. But there's no way of doing that with this, because she's lost the original key, which has got the original chip in it.
There's nothing to transplant. Nothing to put in.
But there might, I don't know, I didn't even look, and I'm not going to look, because I don't want to know how cheaply I could have done it.
Yeah.
But there might be a fake version you can do for maybe £100, because you still need the guts of it and the circuitry and the chip. The most important thing is the chip, because that ID's the key to the car. But you might be able to buy it with the circuitry and a blank chip, and then have Lexus program the blank chip, which they charge you for, but it's still got to be less than 360. It's got to be.
Yes.
I bet there's a way of doing it for around 100. But the Porsche one was a real result. That was just... There was even a YouTube video that told you step by step how to do the transplant. You feel so good when you've achieved something like that, you know, as well.
Yeah.
And it's fraught with danger. You can hear the Mission Impossible music in your head, especially when you get to that point of no return.
Yeah, because you're working with the circuitry and breaking this.
Yeah, and when you get to that point of no return where you've got the old chip out and you have destroyed the original key and there's no way of going back now. You've got to make the new one work now.
You have the den-da-da-da, or den 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 den. You have that in the background in your head.
Yeah, you just hear it there. Yeah, as you're improvising with tools. I needed a razor blade and a little tiny jeweler's screwdriver. There was a YouTube video step by step told you exactly what to do, and I'd pause it, and I'd do the next bit, pause it, whatever. And there was another site had diagrams on exactly how to do it. There's all sorts. I'm sure there'd be a workaround of some kind. But I'm not even going to look. No, not worth it. The money has gone. It ain't coming back. It's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Yeah, I had a car when I was at university that my father had. He had driven, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of miles. Maybe not a... He got a relatively new...
Mm-hmm.
It was a 1991 Oldsmobile Toronado Trofeo. Oh, mm-hmm. It's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
Real touring car. The most comfortable car I've driven.
Yeah. Those Olds used to have really good...
The armrests were a little higher that you or maybe the seat was just a little lower, and it was just a perfect driving position.
Yeah.
You know, it was great.
Yeah.
But it had probably 100... The body, I had to replace the engine... In it, luckily, my cousin at the time was he was working at a body shop, an auto body place that he found and had the I think it was all in to replace the engine.
Yeah,
was $1,500.
Right, including the labor.
When it would have, all in $1,500.
Yeah, fitted. Yeah,
because he found an old one in a. Somewhere and replaced it, and it would have probably cost $3,000 or $4,000.
Yeah, yeah.
At somewhere else, you know, it wasn't the friends and family discount.
Yeah,
but it was when I was sailing. The key itself had a little had a piece of like wire on either side of it.
Yeah,
towards the base.
Yeah.
And that key fit, obviously, for that car, that chip.
Yeah.
That there was it completed a circuit.
Yeah.
And without that circuit being completed, you could not start the car.
Yeah.
And actually, if the key got wet, it would say, the little message came up on the message center. It happened to me once. I had no idea what was going on, so I had to break out the owner's manual. It said, starting disabled.
Oh.
I'm thinking, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah. You know it's not good.
So it was just, you had to wait 5 minutes, I guess, for the circuit to dry out or do whatever.
Yeah.
That it was, it was just that it was wet.
Yeah.
And so after a few minutes, I tried it again, started, no problem. But, I was out at sea for a few months and I had the thing, it was parked at, my mother's place, where it's in a lot. And I guess some kids in the neighborhood decided, well, this car's been here for a while. Let's break into it and go for a joyride.
Brilliant.
Well, because they, with this key and this chip, you can't start the car without it.
Yeah.
You can't hotwire it because that's not, that circuit in the ignition is not completed.
Yeah.
So, and of course they went at it with a screwdriver or whatever it was, trying to start the car.
Yeah.
They actually wrote the car off.
Did they? It was that much damage. Bloody hell.
It's not that, but because that circuit was gone,
yeah,
or whatever inside, they would have had to replace the entire ignition system.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Enough to write a car off. Wow.
And it was old enough that it was, okay, it's just we're writing it off.
It'd be better if they'd taken it round, joyridden it, given it a couple of bumps that could have been bashed out, and you're back in business. It'd be better if they'd have stolen it.
So on the plus side, the car could not be stolen.
Yeah.
On the downside, if anything happens to the key, the entire ignition system has to be replaced.
Well, that's why when I did the Porsche transplant, there was another version of it that I didn't go for, and it basically said, all you have to do is dig out the chip and then tape the chip underneath the dashboard, and then as long as you've got the right blade in the key, which you can get cut, you can make as many keys as you like, and they'll always start the car.
Yeah.
Because the chip is not with the key, the chip is taped under the dashboard. You still need a key to start it. But you don't need a key with a chip in it because the chip's on board the car all the time. That'll be why that was one of the suggestions.
Oh.
I mean, that really is a workaround. But this bloody Lexus one, it's no good because you don't put a key in ignition. It's keyless. It senses that you've got the key on you.
Ah, it's one of those.
Yeah. Did I tell you that was a bloody nuisance? We had one of these Lexus CTs years ago. We leased one. And for 2 years. But when the 2 years was up, I got fired during those 2 years, and we decided to just go down to the one car, to the MX-5, until I got another gig, which ended up being here. But anyway, the thing with the keyless one was I had my MX-5 and Julie had the Lexus. So I never even took the key to the Lexus because I thought, well, I'm never going to drive it unless I'm with her because I'll always go out in my car. But the only time when I do drive it is when we drove up to Liverpool to go to the football together. And so whenever that happened, I didn't take the key. She's in the car with me, and that's good enough for the system, and the car would drive. So it worked out fine. Until one day, we're driving up to Anfield, and we're running really late. We'd hit traffic, and it was like a 4.5-hour drive from Swindon. We'd hit traffic somewhere, and we're running really late. And we don't have the tickets. My mate who sells the fanzines at the back of the cop, John, he's got the tickets, and we've got to pick them up from him when we get to the ground. So we're running really late. I says to Julie, it's like, 10 minutes before kickoff now. John's waiting for us because he wants to go in. So I said, I'm going to drop you off here at the back of the cop, go and get the tickets. I'll find somewhere to park the car. But as long as you've got the tickets off John, he can go in. And even if we go in late, it makes no odds. The car will be parked fine. So she gets out of the car to go and get the tickets off John.
And has the key on her.
Yeah. I'm driving down Walton Breck Road. There's 43,000 people trying to get into this football ground. The traffic is solid. And the car just stops. And a thing comes up and says, no key detected. And the bloody thing stops with like thousands of people around me and traffic and whatever, police horses and whatever. So a policeman bangs on the window and I open the door because I can't open the window. The window's electric and it's all connected to the key. So I can't open it. I open the door and he goes, move this bloody car. You're right in the bloody way. I said, I can't move the car. He said, why not? I said, I haven't got a key. He goes, what are you bloody talking about? How did you drive up the road with no key? I said, it's a keyless thing and my wife's got the key and she's getting my... And he's like, oh, but bloody hell. So I'm texting Julie frantically and whatever. I think in the end I ran out and found her with the car just abandoned and ran back to the car with her key. She got the tickets off John and I parked it miles away because when you get there late, you can't get a decent space near the ground. I was miles from the ground. Walked all the way back. We went in late. But yeah, you got to watch the keyless entry. You should, even if there's two of you, you should have your own key on you because you just never know when you're going to be separated. So this is another reason why we're not going to live with one key. She's paying the 360 and we're having two. They're a nightmare. Modern cars are just a money pit, aren't they? You used to just do...
Yeah.
You just used to be able to just go and get one cut. It was like getting a front door key cut. It was no big deal. It was like a couple of quid. 360.
A little wee on the machine done.
Yeah, the bloke gets a little file out and tidies it up, and there you go. He holds it up, he has a look at it in the light, and that's it, done. Fast while you wait. You know, so this thing's gonna come from Germany, it won't be here till Friday. I don't know why it's coming from Germany. The bloody things are Japanese. If they said it's coming from Japan, I'd get that. Germany? That makes no sense.
Yeah. Why don't they just store some somewhere in the UK?
Yeah. Or is it only held by people we beat in the war? Is that how it works? That they're the only...
The next time it's going to come from Italy.
It's... Yeah. Yeah. It didn't used to, but they changed their minds. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, we're only going to keep them in Axis countries now.
That's right.
In former Axis countries. Okay. Oh.
Yeah. Germany? What's that all about? I've seen it. The car was manufactured in Japan. It was imported from Japan. It wasn't assembled here or anything. It was Japanese. The key came from Japan. So you tell me that you've sent replacement keys to Germany? Because they still have to program it at the dealership. It's there's no code on it in some secret vault in Germany. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's not like you're storing cars somewhere. So they didn't find a cheap storage place in Germany.
No, I'd get that if that was it, if that was the case. Yeah.
It's a fob.
Yeah. It's a key fob. Surely they should have them at the blank ones at the dealership. And when you say, I've lost my key. Oh, yeah. What's your registration number? This is our. Okay. Yeah. Let's have a look on our computer. Oh, yeah. We got all the codes here for your one. We'll just program one of these blanks. Done. They should have them at the dealership. Never mind in Germany. People must lose car keys all the time. It must be the most lost item of a car. They must replace them as much as they think about it.
When you went in years ago for a blank to have a key cut.
Yeah.
They had, you know, every variety of blank key behind the counter.
But in somewhere that's not even connected to Lexus at all. But this is the actual Lexus dealership.
Yeah. How do they not have blank keys? That's the real question here.
Yeah.
How do they not have blank fobs?
Yeah. And actually, the blank fob for the Lexus CT is probably exactly the same fob for the entire Lexus range. It's not like it's even a specialized part. It would do for whichever Lexus you drive.
Yeah, it's the code that make the difference.
Yeah, it's only the code.
It's a fob.
Yeah. You're telling me the dealership doesn't have one? In case somebody rings because they've lost... Just one! Not a whole stack of them. Just one! Because the fob only needs programming, and then it'll open any Lexus in the world. And they'll have the details on the computer of based on your registration and your name and who it's registered to and all the secret code. Germany? I think I know what it is, though. If they have blank fobs on site, no way you can charge £360. But now when you go, £360, that sounds a bit high.
Still, they could charge you is it really going to cost £360? What could the shipping be from Germany?
Yeah, I reckon a pound. Airmail. And it would be here quicker than Friday. Friday? She rings on a Tuesday. It's not here till Friday. That's the rest of Tuesday, Wednesday. Okay, give them, forget Tuesday. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. 3 days. They got to the moon in 3 days. That's the longest journey man has ever made, is the moon. Man has never traveled that journey. No one's ever traveled any further than from Earth to the moon. The longest journey man has ever made, 3 days. Germany? I could drive there in a day. In 24 hours, I could be in any city in Germany.
Keep your 360. I'll pick it up. I'll just pick it up.
I'll just go and get it. Yeah.
I'll just leave it there. Leave it. Just give me the address. I'll get there. Oh, no. Just leave it.
Yeah. Give me 3 days. I could be anywhere in the world in 3 days. I could be in New Zealand in 3 days. And given the right vehicle, I could be on the moon in 3 days.
Yeah. You can overnight ship pretty much anything anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Especially something as small as a fob. A key fob? I bet that when I go in and he prices up the wheels, I bet he can get a new wheel on there tomorrow if you pay the money. I don't know. A key fob, though? Ooh, no, I don't know.
And just, it's plastic.
It's a plastic key fob with two buttons on it. That's it.
It's not titanium.
No, it's not. It's plastic. It's not a rare metal. It is a...
It's not some sort of tungsten carbide hybrid thing.
And they don't have to craft it from scratch.
Yeah, they're not milling it. No. We have a block of titanium. It's going to take 3 days to mill, mill it down to size.
Three days?
Okay. Fine. That's 3 days. I can see that.
Yeah. But I reckon you could mine it and you could mine the raw materials in 3 days and have it. I really don't know. Well, that's it for this one. Back next time with the American soul singer who's about to do a UK tour, Alexander O'Neill. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @GrahamMack. If you want to hear more Mac Nuggets, check out my website, macmedia.co.uk, and subscribe to my Bob FM show on Apple Podcasts. Got a question or something to say? Send me an email. Put your phone number in the email. I might call you back. I might Skype you on the show. My email address is graham@macmedia.co.uk. And you spell Graham like the cracker, Mac like the truck. Till next time. Ta-da!